Welcome to Paper Money, the podcast covering the business side of the game industry. I'm Ben Clark.
And I'm Rhett Kipp.
Today is April 2nd, 2012.
And we can't tell them any really funny stuff because it's April 2nd.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons I didn't want to record the show yesterday. Because we would have been obligated to come up with something goofy. And it's not that we couldn't come up with something goofy, being you and I, but it weighed heavily upon me.
There you go. Trust me, my family had a major family announcement yesterday, and everybody was like, oh, that's great. Wait, is this an April Fool's joke?
That's awesome. Yeah, see, you know, and I didn't want to tarnish our credibility as a reliable news source.
Well, that's good. I'm glad.
I almost said that with a straight face. Oh, Rhett, you still there?
I am still here.
Okay. All right. I was worried you'd laugh so hard you'd pull the mic out. All right. That said, let's move into the news. And when we pitched this show last month, we said, oh, this is going to be the Gamma Trade Show recap show.
So it is. It is the Gamma Recap Trade or Gamma Trade Show recap.
Yes.
It should take us 30 seconds, perhaps.
Yes. Thank you. Exactly. Here's a list of all the news that happened at Gamma Trade Show. Thank you. Good night. Drive safe.
The Gamma site is very informative. It lists nothing.
It lists all the stuff that will happen if you go. And if you go and you're a retailer, by the way, they do say that you get like, what, $1,300 worth of swag from
Alliance? Yeah, it's an enormous amount of stuff. Having seen it, it is actually an enormous amount of stuff.
I don't know how you fly home with that, but that's awesome.
They don't. They ship it. They actually ship it for you.
Well, see, there we go. The Gamma Trade Show, the Gamma website has zero about the 2012 show in post, you know, I don't want to say in post-mortem, but maybe that's the appropriate term. And there's no news. I Googled it, and there's been no news. Now, we know that there's been a couple of announcements that took place. Well, at least one, right?
Right.
Which was that FFG did finally announce the Star Wars RPG. We're at the details on that, and I apologize because they're not on the web. I don't have them.
The only information seems to be an announcement that it will be coming out no sooner than fourth quarter 2012, and that's no sooner, so it doesn't even mean it'll arrive then.
Right. So in what they're saying is if you're really lucky, there'll be advanced copies at Gen Con.
I would not look forward to advanced copies of Gen Con because it appears that all their other Star Wars product that was supposed to make first quarter this year is now third quarter / Gen Con.
Oh, I knew I should have checked the FFG releases. Yeah. So now you were talking with not Randall. You were talking. Who were you talking with over at Catalyst?
Lauren.
Lauren. You were talking with Lauren Coleman. And you said that Lauren said it was a fairly strange show and that people weren't making a lot of announcements.
No, he said it was unusual. They, you know, people were doing business, but there wasn't a lot of news in the sense of, you know, someone coming out and saying, well, you know, by the way, we're going to be doing this or we just got that license or whatever. I mean, quiet.
No, I think that's interesting. And I hope it's just a lull, right? We had a lot of activity in the fourth quarter.
Yes. And,
right. I mean, it's the fourth quarter always has a lot of activity, but with FFG's big announcements and some of the other stuff that came out. This has always been the quiet season. That's why the Gamma Trade Show is right now, but they always had some stuff announced around now for summertime. And I wonder if maybe with the internet that we know what's being announced for the summertime, they just, you know, it's just not, it doesn't have an official release date yet, maybe. So anyways, suffice to say, this ought to tell you how slow the news is this week. The other announcement is that Games Workshop is releasing a new paint set.
Paint line.
Oh, sorry, a paint line. They're expanding the colors from 70 overpriced colors to 145.
145 colors. a lot of different formulas in there, too, which is very interesting.
Now, and you said they're not decreasing the amount of paint in the jar.
No, it is the same.
It's the same amount.
It's almost exactly the same jar. They've modified it slightly.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, the only thing that seems to be different about the jar is that it's closer to clear jars. The caps still do designation work as to it's a foundation paint, it's a paint. They have different terminology. They don't call paint. They now call it shade. Mm. But they do have a new dry brush formula, which is, there's a lot of people that have recently produced pigment, which is just solid pigment. It's a powder. And GW's dry brush is almost to that level. It's just enough medium to like keep it in a suspended state, and looks really interesting.
I have a lot of paint like that, but usually because it's old.
Well, actually, that's exactly what it looks like. we'll see how long it, you know, stands up in the yeah. You know, once you've opened it and started using it. But as far as what the purpose for it is concerned, yeah, it works for the purpose. It's a really nice way to handle dry brushing because it doesn't absorb so deeply into the brush.
Yeah, dry brushing has always caused me to go into work the next day with a multicolored thumb.
Yeah,
because I've always had to. You know, that's what I've always used to test. You know, how much? Okay, do I have enough paint left on the brush? But the thing I wanted to ask about Games Workshop is in the pre-show we were talking about. This is like they're like the second or third company. There's who else has got new
Reaper?
Paint
Reaper just released a new paint rack. It's not really a set, but it's a new rack.
Okay.
So they went from a vertical display to a horizontal display, which is actually fairly nice.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Army, retailer talk, folks.
That's retailer talk. Army Painter is coming out with a new paint line, which is, I forget how many colors, but I think it's about 70 colors in their line.
Oh, Rhett, you have a call.
I have a call. The business line rings. I wonder what this could be about.
It's some kind of a game industry crisis. Hold on, folks. Are we done?
Crisis okay. Over.
All right, excellent. Crisis averted. Anyways, the I guess here's my question for you is, are the paint lines that profitable for these companies to justify putting this kind of this much work into them?
I would guess so. Never well, you know, I the only paint line that I ever dealt with this is one with Ralph Partha.
Mm-hmm.
And their paint line was kind of interesting because it literally had to be hand done. They would, you know, they would have large bulk containers of their paint,
mm-hmm.
and then they would hand inject it into their paint container, their small size paint container,
mm-hmm.
label. And, you know, so it was all this hand labor, heavy labor process, that if you have a factory, obviously do it, it's a sure. lot cheaper. So it's going to be, I don't know. I mean, it was profitable enough for them to continue.
Sure. Ralph Partha got out of paints though, 1990 something.
Well, true, but that had to do a lot more with having been off the market and then having to repenetrate the market and other people having reestablished themselves.
I always loved the old Ralph Partha paints. There were some really great, unique colors in their lines.
And the empty bottle is awesome. We still sell tons of empty bottles at the store because people like to transfer either their dropper bottle paint because they like to paint straight out of a bottle,
mm-hmm.
or their GW paint because they don't like that container, into an MT container. And MT containers, you know, I've had Partha paints that are still around, and as you said, they've been gone at least 5 years, and most of my paints, you know, are well older than that.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, folks, that's how slow of a news week it is.
We're talking about drying paint. Here we are
talking about drying paint. So, the other show that was this month was the 2012 Ed Expo and Educational Games. Now, we've talked about the Ed Expo before, but I've never had a chance to go. And David Miller, the Purple Pawn, lives in the D.C. area, went up to Baltimore for the show and this is from his story on the Purple Pawn. I just want to read this. For the publishers among our readership that are not familiar with this show, I think it's worth considering if your products are aimed at the preschool through elementary level. That seemed to be the focus. Many of the games were labeled with grade levels rather than age ranges, and most vendors were ready with information on how their products addressed, and this is a link here, the Common Core standards. Also, my understanding from talking to vendors was that attendees were mostly retailers rather than educational institutions. All right, so this is the kind of information that this is kind of the thing we've always said about the show, or about the Ed Expo, is that it's an educational show, and that if you are selling an educational type game, it's worth considering being there. Really, educational institutions, I'll be blunt, they don't buy a ton of games, right? You're not going to sell into the Texas, you know, school system and have them buy 10,000 copies of your game, but the retailers go to the show. So,
yeah.
Again, it's a it's not worth traveling if what you have is some kind of a fantasy RPG. But if your game is learning to read, maybe it's a good show. Lots of roll and move stuff, I think he said, and that kind of thing. But again, it's the educational market.
Right. And, one of the things there is that teachers, certainly locally and most of the other ones I know around the country, do invest quite a bit into their classroom, out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the teachers I know locally probably drop between $1,000 and $1,500 into their classroom every year for books and games and things like that to help in their teaching. And that's not part of the school budget.
Yeah, that's part of the – in fact, I want to say that's the national average of something like $1,500 per teacher on the classrooms. And the teacher I used to be married to used to actually do a board game unit. And she would get a grant for the money, and then she would order, the parts and things like that, and the kids would design board games. There are other ways that board games are in the schools here other than the school system is buying it. But again, Ed Expo, take a look at it if you're doing an educational title. And David Miller has a bit more on the show and such on the Purple Pawn website, so go take a look if you like. All right, so moving to the other side of the spectrum, right, the small-scale educational market to the giant mass market. Screen Life closes its doors. Screen Life, the DVD board game company that makes CNET, will close its business operations, the company announced. It's owned by Paramount Pictures since 2008, had about 40 employees. And this is the money quote here from Frederick Huntsberry, Paramount's chief operating officer. Unfortunately, the board game market is not where it used to be and continues to weaken. Given these tough economic circumstances, the only remaining choice was to bring Screen Life's operations to a close. Now, the hobby market, as we know, is booming. But anyone who has been listening to our show and we reported on Hasbro and Mattel's earnings in the past year, board game operations have gone soft. They're down a little bit. They're not huge. And what's the best way to say this? CNET was a one-trick pony. They are, in essence, they were a very large single-game game company.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and I suspect that if I'm Paramount, I sell the license to somebody else who, does a, yearly update or something like that, and I don't worry about it. It's a good title, but let's face it, everybody, has a copy of CNET already. and like Monopoly, there's only so many genre-specific things you can do with it to enhance its appeal. So I don't see this as widely indicative of the board game market. Yes, the mass game market is a little soft, but I don't think that Screen Life closing its doors, the mass market isn't that soft. If you're Screen Life and you've only got one title, it was soft for them. So, all right, so Screen Life shutting down. Moving on to, again, swinging back to the small end of the industry, another single-game company run by my good friend Paulette and Puma, Afrique Anjou, got its third printing this past month. Now, Afrique Anjou is a roll and move trivia game, nothing innovative, but it does, it teaches Africa and African culture and history. And I wanted to bring this out because it's a success story, for a single game company, right? It's proof that you can produce a niche game and do well with it. Paulette is not, is not retiring off of the profits from Afrique Anjou, but, again, this is her third printing. I know she started out, I want to say she did like 1,000 or 2,500 sold through that print run, and now she's on her third print run. So congratulations to Paulette for showing us that, yes, a single game company can stay in existence and be financially viable. Oh, I thought you had a comment, right? Sorry.
No comment there. Not much I can say there.
I said financially viable and Rhett clammed up. All right. So, and finally, given our giant discussion of color last week and Pantone and CMYK and everything else, I wanted to bring this out. Pantone Colors is out. It's a new color board book for kids. If you are a total design geek, you can now get a Pantone Spot Color book for your kids. And it's like a bunch of different shades of that particular color, plus a fuzzy animal, but it also has basically Pantone color chips next to the fuzzy animal, with all of the different variations of that color named and with the Pantone listing below it. So maybe this is a cheap way to get
a Pantone
chipbook. I would certainly look into it. But yeah, if you are a design geek or you want to try and find a cheap way to get a Pantone spot color chipbook, check out Pantone Colors, which was, again, published in the last month. And finally, I wanted to bring this up just because I thought it was a very interesting quote here. There's a game design workshop at Ohio State University taking place in April. It's probably, you know, too late to sign up, but it's being run through their online, their electronic media department or something like that. I apologize, their technical group. But it was interesting because it's being run by Raymond Chandler III. He's been around the industry for a while. But this is the money quote for me. And he says, while studying at Full Sail University, I took a class on game design that was taught by Dave Arneson, the co-creator of Dungeons and Dragons. It focused on tabletop game design and taught me more about the theory behind game design than any book I've ever read on the subject. It is my opinion that you cannot be a good computer game designer without having played or designed board games. Writing a new fantasy story or science fiction role-player game is not game design. It is game writing. Making a clone of Mario with a couple of changes is not game design. It's level design. In fact, many of the things mislabeled as game design in the computer game industry are not game design. The game design fundamental session is an attempt at reviving the discussion about fundamental game design theory. Now, that's a long quote, but I thought it was interesting to talk about the way he approached. He says you need to design a board game before you can design a computer game, right? You need to focus on the mechanics. You can't just write an interesting story or adapt something that's already out there. That's not design. That's not creation. And board games are where you learn the mechanics.
Right.
Anyway, it's very interesting.
And the cheap way to learn mechanics is, you know, no one has to put a huge graphics package behind it.
That's true. You can certainly make a prototype of a board game much quicker and more economically than on a computer game. In fact, there's a Kickstarter game, I think, called The Banner Saga, which is now like 800% funded or something like that. It's a computer game based on Viking mythology. And the first thing that they did was they designed a tabletop mock-up of how their game would play, and I thought that was very interesting. Now, it's a turn-based computer game, but which makes it easier, right, to do as a tabletop. But again, I thought that there is a lot of truth to the idea that you need to understand how game mechanics work on a board game before you're going to do anything new on a computer game.
So, yeah.
All right, so I won't belabor that point. That maybe that's a commentary in a later session.
There we go.
And finally, I just wanted to do a shout out to our good friends at Games Plus Retail Store in Chicago. Happy 30th anniversary! This game store has been around for 30 years, and they just had their big 30th anniversary weekend special this past weekend. So again, happy birthday, Games Plus.
I won't comment.
You won't comment. Okay. Was it not a happy birthday?
It was enormous. The normal walkthrough trade on a Saturday is between 350 and 400 people. There was closer to 800 people on Saturday alone.
Okay. Yeah, and Games Plus. If you notice, this seems to be the way that game stores are now. Right, there's the one that's been around for 30 years, and the one that lasts three. And I don't know if I'm, you know, missing something here, but there are stores that have been around, but there are the permanent ones and the ones that sadly are transient. No, you don't find a divide between the new and the old?
Not so much. I mean, you know, I think it's indicative of just markets in general. You know, there's people that understand markets, and there's the Me Too guy, and every now and again, the Me Too guy really gets it because, frankly, Games Plus was the Me Too guy 30 years ago.
That just sounds weird to say, actually.
Well, it's weirder to say is, you know, the employees.
I guess you could say that about Microsoft Windows, right?
Yes.
30 years ago, Windows was a Me Too product. Well, okay, 20 years ago. But, all right, anyway, so that's all the news for this week. And I want to go on to our listener mail section. We have a fairly long comment that was posted on the website, but it touched on the idea of printed proofs versus digital proofs and some other manufacturing things. So it ties a little bit back into our all about art discussion last month. So I'm going to read a lot of this letter.
Go ahead.
I'm just trying to fill time. No, I'm teasing. But here, let me start with the part that I like best, which he said, where he says, "I loved your February podcast about art and printing. I was listening to it and I was thinking, I wish we had listened to this podcast 5 months ago. Great content, guys. Anyways, here's my question. Why would a printer slash manufacturer suddenly cancel a job with no reason or explanation?" Now here's the story. He goes, "Here's our story. We're printing our first game. It is a non-collectible, expandable card game. The cost was estimated for approximately $18,000 for about 5,000 units. Not bad. You know, really, you're looking at, so $350 a unit, multiply that, you're looking at a sell price of roughly $1,250, $13. And if you're getting, if that's a China price, which would make it more, anyway, suffice to say, anywhere from $13 to $20 on the core set on the price. But we spent a lot of time talking back and forth with the printer. We built a relationship, asking questions and about prepping our funding along with the cards over the course of several months. Now, we're new to the business, and about a week before print, he told me we weren't going to get physical proofs, only digital. I don't know a whole lot about printing, but I always thought proofs were physical. I just wanted to make sure our colors came out right, and I was very adamant about physical proofs. My friend later told me that when he asked about physical proofs, he said they don't offer that, but that the person he was talking to at the printer said if it doesn't turn out right, they would redo the print run. I was a bit skeptical, but I told them as long as we get that in writing, I guess I'm okay with it. I did some research later and found out that what we were requesting was wet proofs. Anyways, my friend called to make this request. The person he was talking to said it shouldn't be a problem. Let me check with my operation manager. And they got a call back and said they've decided not to print. We've decided not to print your game. I'm curious to know what happened. Can you speculate on why they did that? P.S. We did find a manufacturer and we're about 45 days from receiving our product. For the record, he posted this shortly after the last show. So he's hopefully only about 15 days from receiving product. Feel free to email me any more questions to help clarify. Thhanks, Ryan. So now, Rhett, let's first talk about the issue of proofs, because this is something that I was an oversight in our All About Art section last week. Companies more and more are going to a digital proof. And what they'll do is they'll lay everything out on their system for their press, and they will send you high quality PDFs, or they will have, you can actually, there are programs where you can go into a website and view the proofs online. Now, these are great if you are printing soup can labels, all right? Because you already know the colors and you already know how it's supposed to look, and you're trying to make sure to catch any last minute things, typos, et cetera, et cetera. This is not so good when you are printing a one-off and it's your first time doing it. The problem is that chances are your artist has a color matched monitor. The guy at the printer has a color matched monitor, and you probably do not have a color matched monitor, nor do you have that color matched monitor. Even if you do have one, right, that's supposed to be true and everything, you might not have a printer that is set up to handle anything remotely resembling color accuracy. So what's going to happen is you're going to get a digital proof, and it's going to look one way on your screen because you do not have a color matched monitor. Now, you say to yourself, self, how bad can it be? It can be bad. Yes, exactly. It can be bad, right? The difference between orange and brown is a fine line. And so what looks orange on your computer screen might print brown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the moral of this story is generally you want to get physical proofs. The problem is more and more printers don't want to deal with this setup because it's hard for them to do. It becomes an issue. And so what happens is you end up in a situation like this where there's pushback about you getting those physical proofs. The other reason too is chain of custody, right? It slows everything down because they have to do all the artwork, print them. They have to send them out to you. You then have to approve them and return them signed so that they have proof that you said, yes, print this, and then go forward. Now, a lot of times that online proofing system doesn't have a way to create a paper-based system. In fact, I actually had this in a Magic Graphics where we had an issue that it was difficult for us to produce paper proofs. The good news was that we could. And so there were a lot of times where I said, yes, we're going to do this as a paper proof. Getting back to this, there's a reason for digital proofs, right? They're quick. They make the process so much more smooth. They're fantastic for commercial printing. If you are a first-time person who does not necessarily have printing caliber, graphical stuff set up on your computer, there could be an issue. All right. If you have received a something remotely resembling a color-matched proof or print from your artist earlier in the process, chances are it's going to look just as fine on the printer's end. So there's really no need for a paper proof. But if you've never seen this thing except on your screen, or that you print it out from your home laser printer, you really should take the time to get a physical proof. And let me backtrack even further onto the story. I keep using the term color matched monitor. There's actually this little gizmo. It's about $400 if I recall correctly. It looks like a mouse, and you basically run it across some software on your computer screen. You hold it up to your screen and you run it across the color spectrum, and it adjusts, okay, what you see based on what it scans, right? Based on what it sees on your monitor. And it lets you get much more highly accurate representations of color on your monitor, and you can tune that as well actually to a press, which was really cool. So ours were tuned at Imagic Graphics to our big six color Heidelberg press. So we knew what we saw and what we proved was what it was going to look like coming off of the big printer. So that is, that's where you're at with proofs. Okay. There's a reason you want to get physical proofs. I know I'm a bit of a fuddy-duddy, anymore, like I said, in saying, hey, you probably want paper proofs the first time out. And as this story shows, it's getting harder to get them. But I think this is a good, thing here. I think this shows that the printer he was working with wasn't about what he was doing. Right. Am I making sense? Right. I think this was a commercial printer who didn't know what, and as evidenced by the fact that they later canceled the order. This is a commercial printer who wasn't, they didn't know the game market is sure what it sounds like to me. I have never, ever, ever, ever taken a deposit check and then said, we're not going to print your game. The only reason that I can think that they decided to do this is that they are a commercial print shop. They're fairly small, and they decided that they were not going to make a profit on this, or they decided that, Ryan, I'm sorry, I don't want to, cast any aspersions on you. They decided that either you were a pain in the ass or they weren't going to make any money, or both, is usually why, somebody would reject this. But once you put in a deposit, that's a contract, right? Once you put a deposit down and say, yes, produce this game for me, that's legally binding that they're going to produce that. So hopefully they've returned your deposit. And if you didn't put a deposit down, this would explain also why they decided not to print your game. All the games that I've done required in many cases a 50% deposit, unless you were, say, Mayfair Games or somebody who'd, done this kind of stuff before. So, Rhett, have I covered all the bases? Can you think of a reason why they decided not to print their game that I missed?
It may have also been that they got to the project, thought that, maybe they spec the project is one thing and realized, especially like with a card product, that perhaps their presses couldn't handle the process as well. Though they should have given you an explanation. The whole fact that they didn't give you an explanation is very odd business practice.
Correct. And I feel like that maybe you've hit something on the head there. Cards are a difficult thing to print. It's not easy, and it's real easy to underestimate how much labor goes into making these cards come out right. And by which I mean, I'm going to geek out for a second. There's two ways to produce cards. One is a cool machine called a Rollam, which cuts both vertically and horizontally on a single sheet and spits out a deck at the end. So if you have, if you have 100 cards on a sheet and you feed in a sheet, you get a 100 card deck out at the end. The other way to do it is a lot more time consuming, because what happens is if you do not have this very expensive hard to get machine, which runs into the hundreds of thousands of dollars, by the way, for used ones, you have to cut them and collate them. And I'm not going to go out. At some point, we'll do an All About Card Show, and I'll talk about this. But realistically, what can happen is you have a guy who goes, you know, if you have an estimator who's not a card expert, he goes, oh, well, we'll just put it on the collator and da-da-da-da-da. And if he doesn't sit down and do the math, it's really easy for them to come up with a number that is below their a price for you that is below their cost. I used to work with a guy who was like the Rain Man of cards. You could say, oh, I want an 84 card deck. And you'd see him look off into space for a second. He'd go, boy, that's going to be tough. Can you get him to do 85? Because he knew, right? He knew exactly, you know, how the layout was going to work on all that. So they could have basically realized that they had spec'd it wrong and that they were going to lose money on the run. And they just found an excuse to get to not do it. So, all right. Have we covered all of Ryan's bases, I think?
Yeah, I think that pretty much.
Okay, excellent. So Ryan, post back on the site when you get your game out. We'd love to hear about how it did and how it looked, and I'm sure it'll be awesome. But like I said, there's the printing is kind of an art, and there are very few companies that really know the game market. And we tend not to endorse any of one particular company or one particular printer on the show. But like I said, there are a few that specialize in it that really know what they're doing. And if you were dealing with one of those and they decided not to print your game, I'm not sure why. That would be the other reason they decided, Red. There are certain companies, and one of whom is based in Texas, and they don't want to do less than 3,000 of anything.
Well, there is that too,
and I have
not enough big enough print run to make it worth their while.
And I have heard guys talk them into printing 2,500. So it might be a case of, and again, Ryan, I'm not sure who you were dealing with, but if you were dealing with a large company that knows cards that maybe happen to be based in Texas or not, but they, you know, you might have been right on the cusp of profitability for them, and they decided that they couldn't invest any more time in the project and have it come out financially viable. That might have been the other reason. But again, I suspect most likely is what happened is that they misestimated this game. And that's why that you got to the proof stage and they decided that they were going to use this as an excuse to say we're going to get ourselves off the hook on this one. So, all right, Rhett, that's it for this week. How can other people get in touch with us in addition to posting on our stories on the Purple Pawn?
Well, you can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us here at Paper Money Podcast, or
you can go to purplepawn.com/papermoney and post over there. You can also check out our RSS feed at purplepawn.com/category/papermoney/feed. And Rhett, we've come to the end of the show rather briefly. There's just not been a lot going on in March. We were laughing at the top of the show about how we were going to do a Gamma recap, and there's been
turns out that recap took moments.
There's something sinister. There's obviously a news blackout on 2012 Gamma trade show.
Now April will be an interesting month. There's a number of game shows, and we'll one of the bigger ones in the U.S. the Adepticon, which is the Games Day non-GW game.
Did they schedule that on top of
Chicagoland area?
Is Adepticon the same weekend as Little Wars again?
It is the week before Little Wars.
Okay.
Week before Little Wars.
All right.
And I anticipate there will probably be some interesting announcements, but then we've been known to be wrong before.
That's right. Adepticon, by the way, is a great player show. If you're into miniatures in the Midwest, it's worth checking out. It's definitely worth checking out. I don't expect any big announcements, though. Usually, like I said, the spring announcements have generally come around Gamma, and then there's this lull as we work our way into the summer convention season. I think April's going to be a bit of a slow month, and so we'll have to come up with something really cool to pimp on the show.
May this year is Origins as opposed to late June or early July. We have shows coming up fast, and then very long summer before Gen Con.
Exactly. And I'll be honest, folks, I don't want to do another technical show right, you know, only, you know, having just finished All About Art, and here we are in this show still digesting some of the art topics. I do not want to get into All About Cards or All About Boxes for the box geeks out there. You know, there's a guy
always
somewhere.
Always one of our favorite topics.
I know. There's a guy somewhere who's like, I wanted to know the difference between a full telescope and a half telescope box. But that said, he's going to have to wait. So anyways, April, we should have some news in April, but we don't expect it to be a major news month. So Rhett, take us on out of here.
Well, that's it for this month, and we will be talking to you again soon. I'm Rhett Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark. You got really quiet over there, Rhett. Okay, good. You're